People have been using lead and known it was poisonous for thousands of years. But it wasn't until the 1970s and the work of a doctor from Philadelphia that we found out what we know today. Even small amounts of lead can cause children long-term IQ deficits and learning disabilities. Keystone Crossroads reporter Marielle Segarra tells us the story of that doctor and why almost 40 years later the problem persists.
It's 1957. We're at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. And Dr. Herbert Needleman is on his way to see a three-year-old patient. Needleman's a young doctor, 6 feet tall, with brown eyes and dark hair. This is the first case of lead poisoning he's ever seen, and when he shows up, the girl is not in good shape. Her eyelids are drooping, her pulse is slow, she's not making a sound.
This girl was lethargic and you know, almost comatose.
That's Lydia Denworth, who wrote a book about Needleman called Toxic Truth. Needleman has Alzheimer's disease and wasn't able to talk for this story. At the hospital, Needleman prescribes the girl medicine that gets rid of the lead in her blood. And over the next couple days, she starts to feel better. Needleman's feeling pretty good about himself.
He thought he had fixed her problem.
He talks to the mom and tells her, "You know, your daughter's okay, but she was probably poisoned by lead paint or dust at your apartment, and you can't go back there."
And the mother just looked at him and said, "Well, where am I supposed to go?" You know, she didn't have any money. She was a single mother. And suddenly, Needleman says it's like the scales fell from his eyes.
As a doctor, Needleman couldn't go home with his family and take the lead paint off their walls. This girl was probably going to end up back in the ER again. This patient marks the beginning of a lifelong crusade for Needleman. He goes on to make a huge discovery that changes the way we think about the dangers of lead. In the 1950s, when Needleman's a new doctor, lead is everywhere. Paint, pipes, toys, gasoline. You'd hear commercials like this one on the radio.
Drive up to the pump with the Ethel emblem and say, "Fill her up."
But Denworth says at this point, a lot of doctors aren't testing kids for lead because the symptoms of lead poisoning, like vomiting and seizures, look like other diseases. As an experiment, Needleman's hospital starts testing all kids for lead.
When they did, they began to see that it was far more widespread than anyone had ever thought.
After this, Needleman becomes consumed by thoughts of lead. This would be a good time to point out that everyone describes Needleman as a crusader against injustices, large and small. His son Josh tells a story about a canoe trip the family took when he was a kid. He and his father are paddling along a river, and they see a group of teenagers sitting around and smoking.
Generally, I think the kind of group that now as an adult I would try to avoid, and they were throwing rocks at a duck that was floating in the river.
Needleman gets really angry that they're trying to hurt this duck.
And he began to shout at them and said, "Leave that duck alone."
They're so shocked that they stop.
He could just not hold himself back when he saw something that was unjust.
Josh says the same thing went for lead. As Needleman sees all these kids come into the hospital with lead poisoning, he comes across a study from the 40s showing that children who'd been poisoned by lead later had behavioral problems and low IQ scores. And he starts to wonder, these children all had severe lead poisoning, but what about the smaller amounts of lead that most kids are exposed to every day? Could that be damaging their brains? He designs a study to find out. Lead builds up in bones and teeth, so Needleman uses children's baby teeth to measure their lead exposure. He practices on Josh's teeth, which kind of rules out the tooth fairy. But that sort of myth would never have been a fixture in Needleman's home.
I can't imagine my father participating in a fiction in deliberately deceiving his children, even in fun. It's not the kind of person that he was.
After collecting the teeth, Needleman and another researcher test the kids to see if the ones who have high levels of lead also have these cognitive problems. Here he is describing the results in a PBS documentary years later.
We found that children who had high lead in their teeth, but who had never been identified as having any problems with lead, had lower IQ scores, poor language function, and poor attention.
The findings are controversial. Critics, including companies that make lead products, say these things can be caused by other factors, like family life and education. Denworth explains.
A kid in the inner city has all kinds of problems, right? They said the lead is one teeny piece of this, and the effect is minimal, even if there was any effect at all. And Needleman thought any effect at all was criminal.
The research has an impact. The Environmental Protection Agency had already started phasing lead out of gasoline, and in the 80s, thanks in part to Needleman's research, it speeds that up. There's also a federal ban on lead pipes. And then the government puts out a plan to eliminate lead poisoning for good. It says more children should be tested for lead, and that we need to get lead out of kids' homes so they're never poisoned in the first place. Needleman testifies in front of Congress in support of a bill that would fund those efforts.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm Herbert.
His hair is gray now, and he's wearing wire-rimmed glasses and a beige suit.
There is a broad consensus on the part of everybody except the lead industry and its spokesman that lead is extremely toxic at extremely low doses.
He calls removing lead from gasoline a public health triumph, but he says there's more work to do. The idea of getting the lead out of homes, there's a lot of resistance to it from landlords and realtors who say it's too expensive. The bill and others like it don't pass Congress. In 1992, Congress does pass a law requiring landlords to disclose lead paint hazards to tenants, but it can be hard to enforce. In the meantime, Needleman's worried about something else. A couple scientists who represent the lead industry in lawsuits accuse him of scientific misconduct. They say he cherry-picked his data to prove a point. Here he is talking about that accusation in the PBS documentary.
If you're found guilty of scientific misconduct, you're out of business. Your reputation is ruined. You're through.
The University of Pittsburgh, where he's working, investigates for almost a year and finds no scientific misconduct. It says Needleman mischaracterized some of the procedures in his study, but not in a way that changes the findings. As time goes on, more and more studies show effects of lead at low levels, but government agencies stop talking about eliminating lead poisoning entirely. Some people say public health dollars are better spent on other problems, like obesity and diabetes. People make that argument today, too. Lead levels in young children have dropped by more than 90% since the late 70s, when Needleman did his first studies. But a lot of kids are still exposed to lead, through dust, old paint, and pipes. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says no amount of lead in the blood has been proven safe. Denworth says Needleman always felt like we hadn't done enough.
It became old news. We thought we'd solved the problem, and we never really were willing to finish it.
And that's why, despite all that's changed, kids still show up at the doctor with lead in their blood. And like Needleman back in the 50s, there's only so much that doctor can do. Marielle Segarra, Keystone Crossroads.